This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 23rd, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary. Headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest. The Big Deal feature. Research co-pollster Mario Canseco talks federal politics with 17 weeks to go until the federal election. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is Justin Trudeau's penchant for being all things to all people going to be his downfall? The Liberals always try to own the center of the political spectrum, so they try to cater to the left and cater to the right. But it isn't really working anymore in polarized Canada. 2 weeks ago, Trudeau said his government would phase out single-use plastics, including drinking straws, the portable tube. Last week, he gave the green light to the Trans Mountain Pipeline, again. Last year, he spent $4.5 billion of taxpayers' money and wants to spend another $7.4 billion to $9 billion to build it. Perhaps some First Nations will want to take over the ownership, while others are vowing to block it. The purchase angered free market conservatives who didn't want taxpayers' money to subsidize Kinder Morgan. It also angered members of the NDP and Greens for obvious reasons, because they're against pipelines and tankers. Meanwhile, cruise ships, chemical tankers, and even grain ships ply the harbor and are also risks to pollute. Remember the 2015 oil spill? That was the Marathassa grain ship, and its owners escaped paying for the cleanup when a judge found it in their favor. In predictable fashion, Trudeau gave his song and dance about having a good economy and clean environment as if either are easy to achieve. He'll say anything to get reelected, but will he get reelected? I can't let the week go by without mentioning the latest rezoning battle in City of Vancouver, where a landowner wants to tear down a single-family house on Granville Street and build 21 stacked luxury townhouses in Shaughnessy. The problem is this. There is a hospice next door. But the hospice is not the problem. If rubber-stamped, the project would cause noise for a year or two that would put the viability of the hospice in jeopardy. Vancouver Hospice Society Chair Stephen Roberts says he is not opposed to development, just the magnitude of development. The pro-density, abundant housing Vancouver group is out in force, dismissing anyone who suggests an existing hospice should have priority over new luxury townhouses. Shame on them. How the 2018 elected city council decides this issue will be one of its defining moments. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Zhuang Pingwei reports, Chinese police free more than 1,100 human trafficking victims after targeting Southeast Asian networks. Gangs from China and neighboring countries lured victims into China, many of whom were sold as brides to Chinese men, said Guo Lin, a spokesman for the Ministry of Public Security. The ministry started working with police from Myanmar, Cambodia, Laos, Vietnam, and Thailand last July, and by December had detained more than 1,300 suspects, including 260 foreign nationals. They are accused of more than 600 cases of human trafficking, organizing 126 fraudulent marriages, and falsely obtaining marriage, employment, or tourist visas to bring victims into the country. Yonhap News Agency reports in the Korea Times, North Korea named worst human trafficking nation for 17th year. The State Department's annual Trafficking in Persons report placed North Korea among the lowest Tier 3 countries, along with China, Iran, and Russia. The report cast North Korea as a country that uses forced labor as part of an established system of political repression and a pillar of the economic system. It noted that some 80,000 to 120,000 prisoners are held in political prison camps and that all prisoners, including children, are subject to forced labor. It all comes as Chinese President Xi Jinping was in Pyongyang for talks with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, raising speculation that Beijing will use its leverage over North Korea as a bargaining chip in a bitter trade row with the U.S. In news.com.au, Adriana Zapavina reports, the old childhood toy that helped one man crack into the housing market. In the last 12 months alone, more than 400,000 Lego sets have been bought on eBay, equaling about $21 million in sales. And a chunk of those 400,000 sets belong to Josh Mangelson. After holding on to each set for approximately 18 months, Mr. Mangelson saw an average return of over 40%, which equated to an average of 25% above. All up, he scraped together just over $20,000 selling the sets. This, combined with the Queensland First Home Owners grant of $15,000, allowed Mangelson and his wife Jess to do what most millennials can't these days, buy their own home. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Oregon Public Broadcasting reports Washington State City to use goats to help prevent wildfires. A Federal Emergency Management Agency grant will fund the rental of goats to clear flammable brush around Wenatchee. For up to 10 days in July, 300 goats will eat fast-burning grass in areas hard for people and machines to reach. A wildfire near the city, which is almost 240 kilometers east of Seattle, destroyed 28 homes 4 years ago. In the Oregonian, Lizzie Acker reports, this Portland man is trying to organize a massive game of adult hide-and-seek this summer. Aaron Shaver has lived in Portland for close to 30 years, said on June 20th that he's always been interested in games with simple rules, but that he got the idea for a large game of hide-and-seek from a scene in the Netflix show The Society. He's gauging interest for the game, which is tentatively set for July 13th, between 1:30 p.m. and 3:15 p.m., starting at Pioneer Courthouse Square. The game will be free. He's hoping to get a minimum of 100 people involved to make the game the epic adventure he imagines. And last week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Vancouver real estate bucked up for Trudeau at May 22nd fundraisers. Is Richmond birth tourism a magnet for dirty money? And Shaughnessy rezoning hopeful promoted DeGenova's 2018 re-election. Go to thebreaker.news and read the stories behind the headlines. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. 17 weeks. It is 17 weeks until the October 21st federal election. And we welcome back to the Breaker.News podcast, Mario Canseco of Research Co. The House of Commons adjourned until mid-September, so the campaign is unofficially on. I started by asking Mario what he expects over the summer barbecue season from the parties and their candidates.
Well, I think there's definitely things that each of the political parties needs to do. I think in the case of the NDP, it's definitely trying to get Jagmeet Singh better known. I think we still see a lot of people who aren't aware of who he is or what the NDP would stand for. For the Conservatives, I think they'll go steady and try to talk about specific things that they'd like to see happening on the economic front and retain their criticism of Justin Trudeau, which has already begun in the form of some advertisements that aired during the NBA Finals. And I think there's the advantage of incumbency, trying to talk about Justin Trudeau as somebody who's been tested, who's been there, who maybe you are not particularly satisfied with all of the decisions that he's taken on the environmental front or on international relations, but somebody who has been there and has more experience than the rivals who are essentially running to replace him. So I think those will be the three main issues that the main federal parties focus on.
The session ended in June this week with the big story. The big story was pipeline politics. The Trans Mountain pipeline was approved again by the Liberals. Do you look at the timing and see that as a problem for the Liberals going forward in the campaign, that this will be part of attack ads by the NDP and the Greens?
Well, definitely there'll be a lot of criticism from the political parties running against the Liberals about the fact that this decision happened the way it did and right after the climate emergency was declared. It's a tough one in the sense that there's a lot of dissatisfaction from the center left-minded voters who may have supported Justin Trudeau back in 2015, because they saw him as the best vehicle to get rid of the Stephen Harper government. Some of those voters are dissatisfied, not only because of Kinder Morgan, but also because of the promise to reform the electoral system that actually didn't pan out. So I think there's a hope from the Liberal Party that those voters come back into the fold when the election gets nearer and it becomes a decision on who do you want as your next prime minister. I think there's a hope from the Liberals that the Greens and the NDP are not going to climb the charts in a way that is going to make them become feasible alternatives in government, and that some of those voters will really recant and vote for the Liberal Party because they don't want to see an Andrew Scheer government in Canada. I think this is one of the reasons for this to be happening at particular stage. It's before the summer. There's a lot of time for Canadians to get acquainted with other things. And you know, it's better that this is happening now than just a couple of months before the election. Now, that being said, there's an expectation from Trudeau that the construction of the Kinder Morgan will happen sooner rather than later. I think they need to take a couple of pictures and they need to show that they mean business. If this takes a little bit longer and the construction doesn't actually happen until later in the fall, it'll be tougher for Trudeau to be able to say that he cut a ribbon and that he actually outsmarted the Conservatives when it came to building pipelines.
Now, one of the issues that dominated the discourse during the winter and the spring session of the House of Commons was the SNC-Lavalin scandal and the Prime Minister's office interfering in the deliberations there about whether to prosecute SNC-Lavalin. They will be prosecuted. They will go to court as a criminal trial. Jody Wilson-Raybould, who is the ex-Attorney General, who is at the center of this, who wanted it to go to court and not to interfere, as well as Jane Philpott, both kicked out of caucus, but they're running as independents. You had that happen. You also had a by-election over Nanaimo, where a Green Party member was elected. So now there are two members of Parliament who are Green going into the fall. What do you think of Wilson-Raybould and Philpott, their chances as independents? And what do you think of the Green Party's chances to pick up seats at the expense, especially of the Liberals, but possibly at the expense of the NDP?
Well, for the Greens, I think it has a lot to do with the way in which they assemble the campaign. I think we look back at some other elections this century where the Greens were practically obsessed with the idea of running a nationwide campaign, and it didn't actually materialize in the way that they expected it to. You know, having candidates in every riding and finishing fourth or third in every riding isn't going to get you anywhere. I think there was a clear-cut effort to try to get Elizabeth May elected and re-elected in the last election. If they work in the same fashion and try to focus on specific areas where the party has done well, maybe a couple of ridings in Ontario, trying to hold on to the two seats that they have in BC, and to a lesser extent running a more concerted campaign in some Atlantic Canada ridings and Quebec ridings, I think that would go very well to try to bring them into maybe having six or seven seats in the House of Commons. It still remains to be seen what type of situation we'll see when it comes to debates. There has been moments when the Green Party has participated in some debates and has been left out of others. Now that they have two members of parliament, it'll be tougher to get them out. But ultimately, this is the decision of the organizers of the debates. And I think that would go a long way in trying to figure out whether the Greens can have a nationwide presence. Jane Philpott's riding in Ontario is definitely difficult. She won the election by not that large a margin over her Conservative rival in 2015. So if you can split that vote and have a Liberal candidate running against Philpott, it could essentially be easier for the Conservatives to try to win the riding in the election that will happen this year. I don't think Jody Wilson-Raybould faces the same level of scrutiny. Vancouver Granville is a fairly new riding. She won it by a large margin the last time. And it seems that she has a lot of support in the riding, at least from what we see happening with those who are organizing and helping her out when she was a Liberal and who are still doing this now that she's an independent. It's a tough undertaking for the Liberal Party trying to find a candidate to run against Jody Wilson-Raybould. I think if they had somebody in mind who was definitely willing to take a chance and to be supported by the party in a way that would be satisfactory for their chances, it would have been announced already. So the fact that they're still looking for that candidate on, and somebody who's going to inherit a very difficult situation of heading into debates and having to question why they're running against Joey Wilson-Raybould is definitely going to be difficult. Where they hold on to their seats is definitely up for grabs, but ultimately, the effect that you have as an independent in a House of Commons as big as the one that we have in Canada, without the support of caucus or and without participating in some of the major debates, is also difficult. You know, it might be a situation where either of them can win their seats, but still not have the presence and the influence in policy that they used to have when they were cabinet ministers.
Now, this week, Justin Trudeau went to Washington, D.C. to visit the White House, to visit Donald Trump, to talk about the finishing touches for the U.S.-Mexico-Canada Free Trade Agreement, which is replacing NAFTA. Also, issues with China. The two Michaels are still in jail, and the Meng Wanzhou extradition is going to take another year or so to play out in B.C. Supreme Court. It's interesting that Trudeau wanted to run a campaign as Captain Canada to portray himself as a better leader on the world scene than Andrew Scheer and Jagmeet Singh could be. But, of course, the domestic issues like the SNC-Lavalin scandal derailed those plans. What do you think of Trudeau's ability to convey that message that he's a better leader to deal with Donald Trump?
Weeks ago, about who the best person to deal with Donald Trump was, Justin Trudeau has a 2-1 margin over Andrew Scheer, 35% to 17%. The advantages of incumbency definitely play a role here. He's been in those stages. We've seen the pictures. We've seen all of the discussions that he's had with Donald Trump. Certainly, in a better situation than the one we had this week, where the situation with Iran sort of played a role into minimizing the effect of the visit that Justin Trudeau had to Washington. Most of the questions towards Donald Trump were softball questions related to the Raptors' victory in the NBA championships, but most of it had to do with Iran because of what just transpired with the downing of the drone aircraft. So I don't think they got as much bang for their buck as they hoped to, because not all of the questions were related to China or to free trade or to Justin Trudeau himself. Now, that being said, I think there's an advantage for the Liberals to try to paint Andrew Scheer as somebody who won't be able to deal with Donald Trump. I think there's a very good example of what can happen when you let Donald Trump essentially bully you into submission, which is what we're seeing right now in Mexico, where the Mexican authorities have decided to allow the United States government to dictate their policy related to immigration within their own borders. So I wouldn't be surprised if we have some advertisements from the Liberal Party saying, who do you think is best to deal with Donald Trump? Justin Trudeau, who's been there and who maybe you're not completely satisfied with, or somebody like Andrew Scheer, who hasn't been tested and who could be bullied in the same way that the Mexican president was.
Environment is going to be a big issue. And they're using this as a wedge issue, trying to look at the conservatives and say the conservatives took too long for their climate plan. Their climate plan doesn't stand up to the liberal climate plan. Do you think that this is a strategy that can actually help the Liberals, or again, will it backfire because of their approval of the pipeline, of Trans Mountain Pipeline?
Well, I think there's a reason for this to be happening right now before the start of the summer. I think they'll try to focus more on economic issues, the fact that the unemployment rate is low, and dealing with certain things that Canadians care more about when elections happen, such as healthcare or public safety. It's not going to be a campaign based on reactions to specific environmental policies. Stéphane Dion tried that in 2006, and he didn't do very well. So it's a tough situation from the standpoint of what you can do building a nationwide campaign for a couple of years and talk about the environment. It's a different mentality now. I think there's definitely more Canadians who are aware of climate change and who want to see something happening about it. But when you have the heat of the battle and the election, people tend to vote for issues that are closer to home and closer to understand. It's a tough situation for the Liberals if they try to build this into something where they say the Conservatives will destroy the planet. In every single federal level survey that I've conducted, Elizabeth May is always seen as the best economic manager. So it's not a situation where you can take that ecological situation away from Elizabeth May and then hand it over to Justin Trudeau, because it's not going to mean more votes. If anything, I think we see a situation where many voters are looking at the environment as one of the issues that is going to be defining their vote, but not necessarily the most important one. Those who are doing that would probably vote for the Greens or the NDP and not necessarily the Liberals.
And can Justin Trudeau's record, though, become the bigger issue? Can it become a referendum on Justin Trudeau, who came into office with so much in the way of promise to do politics differently, to have disclosure by default? He was going to bring electoral reform. He was going to run it better and differently than the Conservatives did. He was going to balance the budget by 2019. He didn't do that. Instead, he got himself in all kinds of troubles with the free trip to the Aga Khan's island and, of course, the disastrous trip to India with all the costume changes. There's a lot of material there for the other parties to throw at Justin Trudeau.
There's a couple of issues at play. I think it could go similar to what we saw with Paul Martin in his second election, where, you know, he came in with this huge approval rating, everybody happy with the way he had done things as finance minister, and then didn't deliver at the pace or at the expectation that Canadians had when he came in as the head of government. Or we could go back to Justin Trudeau's father, Pierre, in 1972. He gets a minority government. The situation is not as rosy as it seemed back in 1968, but he still was able to form the government and to manage to do something that lasted a couple of years before the next election. So it's a flip of the coin in that sense. I think there's definitely a sense from Canadians that the situation is not as great as it could have been, and that the promise of sunny ways that Justin Trudeau had when he gave his speech on election night 2015 hasn't been materialized. But I think there's also a lot of reticence from many Canadians who are looking at the options at their disposal and saying, do I want to give my vote to Jagmeet Singh, who leads the NDP, or do I want to see a government that is going to be headed by the Conservatives? And I think that, in a way, plays to the advantage of Justin Trudeau. I think there's a lot of Canadians who may be dissatisfied with the way things are going.
Mario Canseco of Research Co., our guest on the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. We look forward to checking in with Mario on the way to the October 21st federal election.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The law firm that the member for Stevenson Richmond East owned has been implicated in a scheme that allegedly laundered money in the Vancouver area for a foreign drug lord. Today, this member's at the Prime Minister's right hand. He's front and center. Compare that to another Vancouver area MP who got kicked out of his caucus simply for standing up to him and doing what was right. Mm-hmm. This begs the question, if he's such a feminist, why the obvious, on-display, double standard?
Yeah. Order the Right Honourable Prime Minister.
We are committed to a robust regime to combat money laundering and terrorist financing. With Budget 2019, we created the Action, Coordination and Enforcement Team and the Money Laundering Center of Expertise. These will help better identify and meet evolving threats. We've provided over $160 million to the RCMP, FinTrap, and CRA. We support policing, real estate audit teams.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends. Sunny ways.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the Nature Conservancy and its donors for putting up $20 million to buy the Next Creek Watershed in Southeast BC, thus protecting it from development. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of June 23rd, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on June 23rd in 1868, Christopher Latham Sholes patented an invention that he called the typewriter? He also invented the QWERTY keyboard in 1873. Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.